The year is 2003. Tom is your first friend on MySpace. 50 Cent costs a dollar on iTunes. The Terminator becomes the Governator. And nobody can find those weapons of mass destruction. T-minus 20. Rewind 20 years with Joe and Mel.
Week of 1 June 2003.
T-minus 20.
The rest is history.
It's Britney, bitch.
T-minus 20.
You need to nominate two housemates.
If you think your son bitch is full of crap, give me a hell yeah.
That's hot. Welcome to Jackass.
It's the podcast where we like to get a little bit introspective about our retrospective. It's T-minus 20, where we rewind to this week 20 years ago, way back in 2003, and take a look at the week that was in movies and pop culture and technical stuff and news. And I nearly stumbled over my words then, but I'm okay. It's your host, right? Joe and Mel. Hello, Mel.
Hello, are you okay?
I'm
sure?
All right. It's the introspective stuff. I've been having moments for the last probably, I reckon, 8 years.
This week we're looking at June 1 to June 7 in 2003. Big news this time 20 years ago was Martha Stewart and her, well, the beginning of her fall from grace.
Yes.
Crafters were so upset across the world.
I mean, people like Tonya Todman probably saw an opening. She's like, I'm just going down to Lincraft. Martha Stewart's going to jail. I need to step in.
Get me my hot glue gun.
Exactly,
I'm there.
Exactly.
Jewel is accused of becoming a sellout.
Really? Jewel?
Jewel.
Sweet little innocent
As in, who
Jewel.
Who will save your soul? Oh, yeah. I can't yodel.
No,
clearly.
No, you can't. Hey, speaking of sellouts, what about this one?
Metallica. I'm not saying that they're a sellout. They're your words, not mine.
No, look, lots of people do say that. I think you should leave Metallica alone. But
they
had a big album release. I've got a great story about this one. That was 20 years ago. And it was a very controversial time. I mean, they've just released an album now. They've been going for nearly 40 years.
Wow.
That is impressive.
It is. And we also had a show that catapulted Amy Schumer to stardom. That show debuted this week, 20 years ago. We'll chat about that too.
Ground Zero. Look, I want to have a talk about how they don't make them like they used to. I'm so surprised at how disposable everything is these days. And it sort of came to light when we were cleaning out, or not cleaning out, but we were going through the granny flat that your grandmother lived in, and we found an old cassette deck. And
yes,
we've got cassettes and
well,
nothing
found,
to play them on.
I found Mel's Mix 7,
yeah.
I think.
Uh-huh.
It was the college years. It was from when I was in college. And I'm pretty sure Peter Andre's on there and Faith No More. And I'm dying to know, because it was one of those mixtapes that I made, but I don't have the cover. And so we came across the tape player at her house and thought, beauty, we'll bring that home. We'll find out what's on Mel's Mix.
How eclectic is Mel's Mix? This explains our son's music taste. You've got Faith No More and Peter Andre on the one cassette.
Mysterious Girl and I think Easy, I think. I don't know. This is why I need, because I've been trying to purchase a cassette player. You cannot buy them anywhere.
No, you can, but they are in excess for
online.
In excess of like for a component
so
cassette
expensive.
Player, not like a boombox or anything like that, or just a cheap one. You want to get a good one that you can put back into your stereo setup. Then you're looking at about $500 base
minimum
for a brand that I've never heard of, right? So we find this old cassette deck and it's not working and it's got a cassette in it. So it's like, which was kind of intense in itself because it's like, oh, this is the last cassette that your grandmother played in this cassette deck.
Yeah.
And so we find it and we're like, well, let's go to the local electronic repair place. And the thing that I discovered when I went into the local electronic repair place with the cassette was, A, I was the youngest person in there, and B, old people don't actually throw anything away at all.
No, no.
So I saw somebody taking in like one of those flat screen TVs that's worth about probably $150, $200, you know, the little tiny little TVs to get repaired. And I'm like, I would just chuck that out. But here I am with the cassette deck. So it was like, it was $100 just to have a look at it.
Yeah.
So we paid them the $100 to look at it. And then they're like, yeah, the belts are, well, I know that the belts were gone in it because I actually pulled it apart and had a look at it myself. And there's rubber belts in cassette decks. And over time, those belts just decay and they turned into this goop that looked a bit like melted licorice. And so I went in there and I'm like, can you clean it up and change the belts? Yep, no problems. That was 6 months ago. Yes. 6 months and $400 ago.
And I still don't know what's on Mel's Mix 7.
We still don't know what's on
Mel's
Mix 7.
I'm getting really impatient right now.
And we still don't know if the thing can be repaired.
They can fix it.
Yeah. Ugh. So they're like, we've got it going. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Mm.
And they're like, we'll keep you posted. So this has become one of those things that's just a never-ending kind of saga. You know? It's like, when's the tape deck coming back? And you'll forget about it.
Mm.
And then you'll be like, I'll give the electronics place a call. And when you do, they're really aggressive. We told you, and it's
they're probably dealing with lots of old people yelling at them because they can't fix things from 1942.
Well, the moral of the story is just throw it out and start again, buy new stuff, because it's going to cost you a fortune to repair the old stuff, and we probably could have bought some new stuff by now. But
there's not that many repair shops either these days. It's kind of a dying art. I remember in the 80s, we had a guy that fixed TVs in the street next to us. So every time our TV was on the fritz, we'd just pack it up and walk to the next street and he'd fix it. And there were repair people everywhere. And just trying to find someone to fix this player was nearly impossible.
I kid you not. When I first went in for the introductory thing, I had the guy that brought in the TV. Halfway through my conversation, an old guy brings in a toaster. A toaster.
Was it a good one?
No, it's just this standard like Breville toaster that you could get for about $20 from Kmart.
Don't throw anything away. Maybe what we need to do is just hang out at the store for a while and ask one of the customers if they have a cassette deck they're willing to sell us.
I think that old people are good for the environment because they don't throw stuff away, that kind of goes two ways as well, because then they hoard stuff too, which is terrible. But they don't throw things away. Mm. They get them fixed. They repair them. And there's a lot to be said for that, especially it's very thrifty, you know. And like if you look at some of the news stories coming out of China where there's like there's an area of China. It's like this huge field and it is full of bicycles. It's just this bicycle graveyard. And I'm not talking about like hundreds or thousands. I'm talking millions of bicycles just all piled up, you know, just disposed of out in the middle of nowhere. And that's terrible.
Mm.
You know, so you've got to be grateful for the thriftiness of the elderly. and I guess also the connivingness of the electronics repair person, because obviously, yeah, it is a dying art, and that's why they're charging us up the
Yes.
Let's get this show on the road. The Hatch, Match and Dispatch clue for this week is a celebrity who is having a birthday, and they famously said this.
I was a PA on an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie called Collateral Damage, and all right. One person was like, no, and that was the big line in that movie was, open up the door, there's a bomb in there.
Yeah, celebrity having a birthday. We will revisit that clue at the end of the show. It's a cracker. It's a very funny story, a very funny guy. And how good is his Schwarzenegger impersonation?
Very good.
I'm not even going to try after that. Over to the news.
4th of June.
4th of June.
Was some big breaking news in the craft world.
So nothing was really happening from the 1st to the 3rd, and then on
the 4th of June,
hell breaks loose.
In the craft world. It's not often we have some breaking craft news, but this week, 20 years ago, we did.
People were smashing windows and setting fire to the local Lincraft. Unpicking their cross stitch. Yeah,
anger and frustration.
Crazy. Yeah.
It was an emotional time.
Bedazzling everything in sight, you know.
American businesswoman Martha Stewart resigns as chairman and CEO of the company she founded, her media and homemaking empire, Martha Stewart Living Omni Media.
That's a big title. What happened at the planning day when they were workshopping that?
Chairman and CEO.
Yeah. Well, what are we going to call it? We're going to call it Martha Stewart Living Omni Media. Not multimedia, Omni Media, in omnipotent, as in we are everywhere.
Everywhere. Yep.
That's your ego.
I am the craft overlord.
Your ego is writing checks that your accountants can't cash, maybe?
Well, she resigned just hours after an indictment and fraud charges were laid against her. She started out as a stockbroker, which is quite interesting as we move through the reason why there was fraud charges. She started out as a stockbroker. She was also a model back in the day.
Yes, and I've always thought she's kind of hot in a crafty kind of domestic bliss kind of way.
Yes, yes.
So there you go. Well,
yes, that's why.
She was a model.
She was a model. Mm. Then in the 80s, she released a number of successful cookbooks. In 1990, she signed with Time Publishing Ventures to develop a new magazine called Martha Stewart Living because her cookbooks were quite successful.
Yeah.
So they saw an opportunity there and gave her a magazine. And then off the back of that, they started a television show. I think that was also called Martha Stewart Living.
Living. Mm.
Based on the magazine. She was on the Today Show. She had guest appearances, as you do, on the early show. She did primetime holiday specials.
She was a go-to. She was like America's mum, you know. She'd teach you how to cook a meal. She'd show you how to darn your socks. She'd do all of those sorts of things.
Yes, and then in 1997, she purchased all of these different Martha Stewart bits and pieces, like the magazine, the TV show, pulled it all together into the
Omnimedia
that we now know and love.
Yes, yes, yes.
She was chairwoman, president and CEO of the company. But then on the 4th of June, it all unraveled.
It did. The Securities and Exchange Commission filed securities fraud charges against Martha Stewart and her former stockbroker, Peter Bakanovich. The complaint filed in federal court in Manhattan alleged that Stewart had committed illegal insider trading when she sold stock in a biopharmaceutical company. I don't know if it was part of the Omnimedia or not. ImClone Systems, Inc. She was into cloning. Martha Stewart was into cloning.
I'm not surprised.
Whack that in your cookbook. That was in 2001 after she received an unlawful tip from her stockbroker, Peter Bakanovich, or Bakanovic. Bakanovic? Bakanovich. Bakana doesn't matter. They also alleged that Stewart and Peter subsequently created an alibi for the ImClone sales and concealed a whole bunch of facts during SEC and criminal investigations into her trades.
There was also an indictment charging them criminally for their false statements about the trades. Now, ImClone, despite the name, wasn't all about cloning. It was biopharmaceuticals, which I think they specialised in oncology medicine, so treatment and prevention of tumours and
rubbish.
Cancers.
It's a front for cloning.
Maybe.
There's actually seven interchangeable Martha Stewarts. That's why she's still
alive.
She's
that's why it's Omnimedia.
That's why she's Omnimedia.
That's why she can watch. That's why she is the craft overlord, because there's 50 of her.
You've hit the nail on the head. Where these are all allegations. This is all allegedly, but she's cloned herself, and that's why she can be everywhere all at once.
That's why she's an Omnimedia.
Mm.
ImClone's drug.
The Martha Stewart multiverse.
ImClone developed a drug for the treatment of colorectal cancer and head and neck cancer.
Oh.
And it was before the FDA, so the Food and Drug Administration, for approval.
Right.
Right. So the FDA were due to make an announcement on whether or not this drug was approved in 2001. Just before the announcement was made, a bunch of executives sold their stock.
They jumping ship.
This includes ImClone's founder, Samuel D. Waxel, who was arrested on insider trading in 2002. He sold his stock. He instructed his friends and family to sell their stock. His daughter sold hers. She made, I think, $2.5 million.
Yeah.
The father sold his for $8.1 million.
Yeah.
And then Martha sold hers.
Well, because Peter's got wind of it. He's seen the writing on the wall. He's looking at all these people because he's a stockbroker
himself. Peter is a stockbroker for the ImClone peeps as well.
Yeah.
So he sees them selling their stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
He calls up Martha.
He's like Martha.
Or the Marthas and says, sell your stuff.
He's like, which Martha am I talking to today? All of us.
Going down.
We are legion.
So she sold all of her shares.
Yep.
I think 3,928 shares in total.
Mm.
The very next day, the day after she sells her shares, the 28th of December, ImClone announced that the FDA had decided not to accept their application. They were rejected.
Fancy
and by the
that.
Close of trading the next day, The stock dropped 16% to $46 per share. So by selling when she did, Martha avoided losses of around $45,000.
That's not that much.
But when you're looking at the when you're looking at Omni Media, Martha,
yeah.
I don't know that I don't think 45K.
It's
like she'd just have that in her bedazzled purse.
Look, in hindsight,
in coins.
Exactly. Like it's chump change for Martha Stewart. She is worth millions, possibly. Well, I don't know if she's worth billions, but she's definitely worth millions. I mean, she's, you know, omnipotent, omni-media. She's, you know, working towards godlike status. And in the States, she probably has godlike status. So it really, I think this was just an exercise in a bit of a brain snap, bad judgment on Martha's behalf. I mean, she's had advice from a stockbroker. He's going, sell those shares. She's like, you're a stockbroker. Righto.
And it's funny that you say godlike status, because at the time I was working at a summer camp.
Yeah.
When this all went down.
Yeah.
And at the summer camp, you could teach different things.
Right.
So there are all the cool jocks that were teaching things like basketball and volleyball.
Canoeing.
Softball, canoeing. Yes, I taught swimming. I didn't know I was meant to teach swimming, but I ended up teaching swimming.
You're not very well.
You're
not the jock type.
No, I know. Well, I thought I was going to be a lifeguard, and then they told me I had to teach kids how to swim.
Oh, really?
And that's all right.
Did they give you one of those red buoy things?
They did.
Really?
Yes, just like on Baywatch.
And when you were like just parading around as a lifeguard, were you just singing that theme song in your head?
I'll be there.
I'll be ready.
No.
I'll be ready. No? Okay.
Anyway, so you had the jocks.
Yeah.
And then you had the crafting teachers.
Yes.
And the crafting teachers taught things like ceramics and knitting and cross stitch and tapestry.
Yeah.
This goes down. They lose it. They were crying. They're in the craft shed crying in like cross stitching memorial pieces to Martha.
Right.
They didn't know what to do.
They would have. They would have been like, listen, we're going to have to sacrifice a couple of these children on our altar to Martha Stewart.
Yes.
Because they'd have altars to her. Yeah, exactly.
That they were friends with a convicted felon. They didn't know what to do. But it was big news. And it never would have come to light if Doug, the assistant of Peter, hadn't told investigators.
Oh, good on you, Doug.
So he was having a chat and he just offered up the information to investigators.
Wow. And then they're like, hang on, Doug, there's something in this.
You're talking about the Marthas, the Marthas.
Yeah, we're going after Martha.
Mm.
So while all this is happening, she does an interview with Diane Sawyer about her maybe having to go to prison.
I think I will win this case and be proven innocent of any wrongdoing, yes. At my age, there's no time for an unexpected, undesirable, unwanted hiatus. None. One that you can't really control.
Martha, it is possible that you could be sent to prison for up to 30 years. Are you scared?
Who wouldn't be scared? Of course I'm scared. The last place I would ever want to go is to prison. And I don't think I will be going to prison, though.
Oh! That's incorrect, Martha. I'm sorry.
I love it how she's like, jail, I ain't got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that. You got hard time.
I've got lots
time.
Of things to do hard in my time. Omni Media. I do not have time to go to jail.
Send one of your clients, you'll be fine. Yeah.
So she was found guilty and sentenced on the 16th of July 2004 to 5 months in prison, 5 months of home confinement. Remember she had the tag, the ankle bracelet. I'm sure she could have crafted something or bedazzled it and made it look
to make it look
fabulous.
Fancy. Look, I'm sure we'll revisit that in a later episode as well because it was big news at the time and the whole saga goes on and on and on. But I think Martha Stewart in prison would be pretty crafty. So I'm thinking maximum security because, you know, if if you give her, like, I don't know, a shoe and maybe like a toilet paper roll or something, she's going to
MacGyver her
figure
way
a
out.
Way to MacGyver her way. Yeah, there's like it's MacGyver and Martha Stewart.
She could finger knit some kind of thing to climb down the
side. Exactly, finger knit a ladder. You know,
definitely.
She could carve a shiv out of soap. No dramas, you know. It'd be a worry. Anyway, I do kind of feel sorry for her because it was only over 45 grand.
45,000, I mean, going to jail for that.
Having said that, I'm pretty sure that her prison stay was exceptionally cushy and it did buy her a lot of cred, especially amongst people like one Snoop D-O-double-G, who befriended her at the roast of Justin Bieber. I don't know. So they actually became really good mates.
Ooh.
So she was sitting next to Snoop during the Bieber roast. The actual recording while they were there live went for something like 6 or 9 hours or something.
Ooh.
And Snoop Dogg was smoking joints through the whole thing.
As Snoop Dogg does,
Martha
yes.
was there breathing the secondhand smoke and just getting pretty chatty with Snoop Dogg. So they were chatting back and forth and they forged this friendship that got the idea into the heads of a few TV execs that they should do a show together. And they got wind of that and said, nah, we'll talk to each other and we'll sort that out amongst ourselves. And so I think it was called like Martha and Snoop's potluck dinners or something. And there's been tons of celebrity guests like I don't know. Paris Hilton was on one episode and they made mulled wine.
Oh, Martha, what will you be making for us to drink today?
It's mulled wine, and it's very traditional at Christmas time.
This is the Martha
Wine Company.
First,
you make a sugar syrup, some star anise. Do you know what star anise is?
Never seen it before in my life.
And this is an Asian spice. Look at that.
Asian who?
Asian spice.
What is that? It's like a starfish.
It is. It's like a starfish, but it's
is
not.
Is it a lie?
No, it's a spice. And then a whole bottle of wine.
I like this show. I love it.
And then bring that to a simmer, and then here's the wine itself.
I feel like I'm on an old Western movie the way you pouring this in the cup.
Have you never had this type of wine?
Never.
It's so good.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Toast to success and nothing left.
Oh, yeah. That's in my body.
You don't like this? This is good for you.
This is opening up my whole neck. I may need some of this before I start wrapping it.
Mulled wine is a spicy wine.
I'm going to have to call this drink the Mariah Carey because when this is over, what all I want for Christmas is to lay my hot ass down somewhere.
Yeah, it's a cheesy show, but it's a good show. And, I mean, if anything, it's probably propelled her even further into the hearts and minds of thousands more people across America because of the cred that she's got for hanging out with people like Snoop Dogg, who will, you know, he'll do anything for a buck, really, won't he?
When she went to jail, there's a lot of speculation that it would end her media empire.
Huh.
But it was the biggest comeback, and her company returned, so I think 2005 was because she had a couple of years probation as well. 2005 is when she started her comeback campaign. And then in 2006, her company returned to profitability. She rejoined the board of directors in 2011 and then became chairwoman once again in 2012.
Yeah.
And the company was then acquired by Sequential Brands in 2015.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks ago, she became the oldest Sports Illustrated swimsuit cover model at age 81. Did you see that? It was all across the media. She was looking fabulous. Stunning.
Oh, my God. You know what I would have loved to have seen her do a cameo in a show like Prison Break or something like that? That would be great. Look, the legal issues keep rolling on. In Australia, it apparently, if you are a heroin dealer, you are still entitled to tax deductions. So on the 5th of June, the Federal Court of Australia rules in the case of the Commissioner of Taxation versus La Rosa, a convicted heroin dealer, that he is entitled to a tax deduction of $220 for money stolen from him during a drug deal.
Can I just say, La Rosa, good on you for being so organised. It's the 5th of June. It's not even 30 June. It's the 5th of June and you're already getting your taxes organised.
And he's taking
that's
on the
impressive.
Tax. Yeah. I mean, what
most people don't do it till, you know, 2 years later when you get the letter threatening you.
And he's a heroin dealer. I just wonder what he declared. In 1996, La Rosa was actually sentenced to 12 years in prison for importing heroin and possessing heroin and amphetamines with intent to distribute. So as a result of his convictions, it comes to the attention of the ATO, the Australian Taxation Office, right, that he's failed to lodge tax returns for the 7 financial years.
So
he's not organised at all, actually.
He was turning over a new leaf this year.
You reckon?
2003, he's gone, nah, I'm on it this year. I'm going to get my return in.
I don't think so. So from 1989 to 90 and 95 to 96. So there was a period there from 90 to 95 where he did decide to turn in a tax return. I don't know what was going on there. Weird. So the ATO issue him notices of assessments for those years, and his taxable income included legally and illegally obtained income. So he's got it all out there. You know, he's not doing cashies.
No.
He's actually put it in the bank or something. I don't know. And the Australian taxation law actually does not distinguish between legally and illegally obtained income, according to this particular story.
At this point in time,
yeah.
Back in, 2000,
early 2000s. I sincerely hope that has changed.
His assessed income for 94 to 95 included a sum of $220,000 cash that had been stolen from him during a botched drug deal.
Oh, don't you hate it when your drug deals get botched?
Money was accumulated from drug dealings and had been buried in his backyard, apparently, and then it was stolen. So he asked for that to be included in his assessable income. The tribunal concluded that the stolen money met the general deduction provisions in the Income Tax Assessment Act 1936.
Right.
And therefore could be deducted from LaRose's taxable income.
So it was buried in his backyard.
Someone
and it was stolen.
It. Yes.
Do you reckon he drew like a treasure map in his backyard? Somebody's like,
yarr, I've got the treasure of La Rosa. I've stolen ye treasure. I found ye map and I'm digging up ye backyard and I've taken ye $220,000.
Well, he managed to deduct that and his 1996 diary as well. So well done, La Rosa. Then in April 2005,
well,
Treasurer...
It's good to get the work diary. The work diary is always tax deductible.
Definitely, well, as long as it's for work. 2005, Treasurer Peter Costello announced that the government would amend Australian tax law to deny deductions incurred in the furtherance of or directly in relation to activities in respect of which the taxpayer has been convicted of an indictable offence. So I guess that means you can't deduct your drug money.
So and so forever, that has become a reference point. It's the Australian Tax Commissioner versus La Rosa. Because of that, we've changed the law in 2005. So that's good. In June 2008, La Rosa and his wife Kim actually were reported missing.
Mm.
Yes. We go into true crime here. Their bodies were found in Chittering, Western Australia. And in January 2009 and 2011, Frank McHale and his son Adam were convicted of their murders. They were sentenced to life in prison.
Mm, that got dark all of a sudden, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Not tax deductible either.
No, the law has changed at this point.
Yeah. How much do they get paid for making license plates?
I'm not sure.
Is that taxable income? Let's move over to some technical news, which was great news for anyone who had a bit of a phobia or an aversion to needles, because in June 2003, the FDA approved this medication called FluMist, which was the first influenza vaccine. Influenza vaccine? Oh, finally, finally. Be rid of the Kardashians forever with FluMist. No, influenza, not influenza. No, I did it wrong. Influenza, not influencer. Oh, boy, it's going to be a long episode. It was delivered via, instead of a needle, it was delivered via a nasal spray.
Flu viruses are out there, but you can help protect your child with the only needle-free nasal spray flu vaccine that helps protect against influenza in people ages 2 to 49. FluMist Quadrivalent. FluMist starts working where flu typically enters the body, the nose. It may not protect everyone.
Bless you.
FluMist is an option recommended by the CDC. FluMist is proven effective in clinical studies. FluMist Quadrivalent should not be given to patients who are severely allergic to any vaccine component or eggs, or who have had a severe reaction to a previous dose of any flu vaccine, or if they are a child or adolescent taking aspirin therapy. FluMist Quadrivalent may not be right for patients who are wheezing, have a history of wheezing if under 5 years old, or have had Guillain-Barré syndrome. Tell your doctor if you or your child have a weakened immune system, heart, kidney, or lung problems, diabetes, and about all the medicines you take. Help protect the ones you love. Help fight flu with FluMist. Ask your doctor for FluMist Quadrivalent.
Now, that is a more recent commercial for FluMist, taken from the United States. What I find so interesting about the United States and TV advertising, particularly in relation to medicine, is A, they advertise medicines a lot on TV in the States, which they do not do here in Australia. And And when they do, I see it on the NFL Network all the time. They're always advertising medication on the NFL Network. Like in between fast food commercials, it's insurance and medication. And with the medication commercials, and you would have heard it right there, 20 seconds roughly of a, maybe a 60-second to 90-second commercial is spent telling you about what the medication is. Mm. So that's 20 seconds. And then the last between sort of 40 and 60 seconds is spent hitting you with a whole bunch of disclaimers so that they can kind of, I guess, protect themselves or indemnify themselves against any legal action based on somebody perhaps taking their medication and experiencing an adverse effect and then trying to do some sort of litigious activity towards them.
Yes, the disclaimer is longer than the commercial.
Yes.
And you get to the end of that and you think,
maybe it's not for me.
I think I've probably got one or two of those things. Yeah, I'll pass.
I'll give it a go anyway. Doesn't matter.
I think it's a great idea, though.
Yes.
Have you ever tried to
vaccine by nasal spray
a child or even an adult who's scared of needles to get their vaccination? Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I have.
So
you know I have.
So imagine that. How much easier would that be?
Do you reckon? Do you reckon it would be? Do you still got to try and insert something into them? It's just not a needle. It's a nozzle in their nostril. Like,
it'd be better if you could do it in the ear. I feel like the ear would be an easier orifice to get it into.
Yes. Chuck them in a headlock and
Yeah. I think so.
Unlike the flu shot, which is made with a dead virus, this vaccine actually uses a live but weakened virus.
Mm.
And it can grow in the nasal passages, but not in the warmer conditions found in the lungs. So and that's where you get the flu, right? In your lungs.
Mm.
So in one trial of adults aged 18 to 41, flu mist protected apparently 85% of those exposed to a strain of the virus, whereas injected flu vaccines are 70 to 90% effective. So, I mean, it's right down the middle. Like,
interesting that they trialed it, and I guess morally you can't do clinical trials with people under 18, but they obviously trialed it with 18 to 41, and I think they did say that it wasn't as reliable for children, yet they're marketing it to children.
Exactly, yeah. And it's still available today. And that's essentially the primary audience is parents with kids who don't like getting needles, so that's why they do it. They just shove a bit of flu mist up your schnoz and hope for the best. All right, Mel, let's talk about some music.
Let's do it. Well, we won't talk about the first one, the UK number one, R. Kelly, so we'll just keep moving.
No, good, keep moving on.
Number one here in Australia, the same as last week, and also the same as number five over on the US charts.
Five.
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. As long as you want, you know I got it.
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. I know what you want.
Two. Get busy, just say that booty non-stop. When the beat drop, just keep swinging it. Get jiggy, get drunk, up, percolate. Anything you want, forgot it, that's the lady.
One. Girl, it's easy to love me now. Would you love me if I was down and out? Would you still have love for me?
If I fell off tomorrow, would you still love me?
US Billboard charts. Of course, we were talking about there. Evanescence, number one in Australia, number five in the US.
It's hit the top five. And this week's top five is a legitimate top five. We haven't had to replace anything.
Oh, I'm so happy that,
so good.
That R. Kelly and the remix to Ignition is out of the top five, because that was getting a little tedious.
I'm it like, was. Oh,
what are we going to replace it with this week? You know what? Next time.
Peter Andre has run out of songs.
Next time I'm just going to do it because it's historical. Like, okay, Ray, Matt, you've got a point.
I think
okay.
A few people made that point. Yeah. And it's a good point, but, you know, we had to stand by our decision.
I'm not backing down once I've made a decision. That's exactly right. And I'll support you in any decisions you make too, dear.
I appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Anytime.
Thank you very much.
What else we got in the chart?
Number four, Can't Let You Go, Fabulous.
Fabulous, yep.
Number three, I Know What You Want. That was Mariah Carey. And was it Busta Rhymes?
Busta Rhymes. Yes. Busta Rhymes.
Number two, Sean Paul, Get Busy. And our old mate Fitty, still number one with 21 questions.
Just him being needy all over again. 21 questions, 50 Cent. Yeah.
Let's have a look at album releases for the first week of June in 2003. We had... Well, I don't know if it's 0304 or 0304 or 0304. It's got a zero, it's got a three, it's got another zero, and it's got a four. And it's by Jewel.
Yeah, I loved Jewel.
Did you?
Yeah, still do.
Very folksy, she's great. Wasn't she?
She just, I feel like she was one of the first female performers to adopt or at least be, well, she was the first one that I was kind of exposed to. Jeez, I wish I was exposed to. sorry, that had that kind of vocal style.
That and, it's sort of folky. I think she was a yodeler.
Yeah, and that's what made her sound so unique because she could do that really like soft kind of stuff and then go into that almost yodel.
Mm.
But she was applying it to this beautiful acoustic folk music that sounded great, so good.
Yeah, and she had phenomenal success in the 90s.
Yeah.
This one was her fifth studio album.
Yeah.
And she made a really big departure from that folk sound that we knew her for. So,
oh, did she what?
So pre-2003, Jewel, singles like this one, You Were Meant For Me.
Dream lasts for so long, even after you're gone. I know you love me and so you will see you were meant for me and I was meant for you.
Lovely. Is that one that you like?
Sublime. Yeah, I do like it. It is very nice,
isn't it? Yep. What else did she have? Who Will Save Your Soul?
Oh, that was probably one of my favorites, I think.
You know you love him if you put him in your will, but who will save your soul when it comes to the flowers now? Oh, I'll save your souls after those lies that you told.
So you can hear the yodel. Very, you can hear a little bit of the yodel in
very
there.
Very yodely, isn't
Lilo-lay-hoo.
It?
Yeah.
Foolish Games was another really big single for her.
These foolish games are tearing me apart. And you're gone, thoughtless.
I just really love her voice. I love that she can do that really soft, sublime stuff, but she's got some power in those pipes.
She really
and, you
does.
You know, so that when she is actually climbing up on the mountaintops and in case, you know, if she gets a little bit lost, she can just start to belt out a tune and be rescued by a St. Bernard with a little keg under his little collar full of rum to just keep it going.
I didn't love her as much as you, and it's not her fault. When I moved out of home, I lived with a couple of chicks that loved Jewel.
Oh, that's, yeah.
And they would always play her when they were cleaning the house on a Sunday morning when I had the worst hangover and I'm just trying to sleep in bed.
And she's warbling in the background.
Jewel is yodeling through my brain that is just throbbing after a big night.
Yeah, so, you're like, these foolish games are tearing me apart.
Oh, they did. Yes. Sorry, Jewel, it's not your fault. So age 15, she gets a scholarship at the Arts Academy in Michigan where she studied operatic voice.
Yeah.
She was then discovered in 1993. She was singing at a local coffee shop. She was a surfer.
Uh-huh.
She was singing at a coffee shop every Thursday.
Yep.
And
doing a residency.
She was doing a residency. Yes. So a guy called John Hogan, lead singer from a band called Rust.
Oh, Hulk's brother. Brother. I mean, Hulk's brother. Sorry.
Discovered her and then told someone, I think who must have been their label, they must have been with Atlantic Records.
Right.
And drove out there to listen to her performing
at
the coffee
shop. They're like, you've got to go to the coffee shop.
Go to the coffee shop. This surfer, this yodeling surfer girl.
Jewelomania is running wild.
Is at the coffee shop.
You've
got to
go and check it out. Yeah.
And they did, and they loved her. They signed her and released her debut album in 1995.
Yep.
It was one of the biggest selling albums of all time, 12 times platinum.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then she brings out this album, 0304,
uh-huh.
0304, 304, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was described as an extreme musical makeover. And a lot of people said she had become this massive sellout by going pop and moving away from her folksy yodeling roots, and say that a lot of people said that she took a risk and actually never recovered.
Well, I'm all for that. I mean, we're going to talk about some musicians that took a risk later on and were punished for it as well. But she, I think, was saying that she was inspired to do something a little bit more upbeat in light of the Iraq War. Mm. So she wanted to go in and do something different. She wanted to remove herself a little bit from the sound that she had, you know, pretty much mastered. And, I mean, what else can you do with it? She's done everything. She's released, like, some of the best-selling albums of all time, like you said.
Mm.
Like, what, you know, time for a change. And this is the problem when artists decide that there's time for a change and they have an established fan base.
How dare you? And they're like, how dare you? I've bought every one of your albums.
That's right. You belong to me. Yes. You were meant for me and I was meant for you.
You can't go changing now. Yeah. I don't like change. I think on her album before this, there was a single on there. And it got remixed. It had like several different club remixes and it became really popular in the clubs and entered the dance charts.
Yeah.
And sort of opened her up to this new market.
Well, the
and
guys
she's
from
gone.
Atlantic Records would have gone, hey, Jewel, I think we're onto something.
She's gone, hang on a minute. Don't mind this dancey stuff. And this is probably the biggest single from that album.
Unfortunately, I associate that song with ladies' razors.
Intuition, that was. And if you watch the video is like a parody of product placement.
Yeah.
And then, commercialism. And then a few months later, Schick bring out the Intuition razor. What is it? Lets you lather and shave in one easy step.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to lather and shave a bunch of time?
It was actually very handy when I was at summer camp again, because we were in these tiny, we had these tiny little showers in a bunk in the middle of the woods with flimsy curtains. So you'd shave and the curtain would stick to you. You know when the shower curtain sticks to your butt and you're like, who else's butt is stuck? The Intuition, you ran it under a bit of water, had like a soap thing on the end, and I just sat out on the bunk steps and just shaved my legs out there.
Oh, lovely.
Lather and shave in one easy step.
Did you sing the song? Did you hum the song?
I did. I actually did have the song stuck in my head while I was shaving my legs. It was made for a very fast shave.
A whole bunch of Martha Stewart fans walking past you weeping and you're like
crying and I'm just
Mel's shaving her legs. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, but just nicked my kneecap. Oh dear. Ouch. Aside from using it as the music for the razor, the company actually had Jewel sing at Intuition Fest, a razor promoting concert in Central Park.
Amazing. Was it free? I hope it was free.
I hope they weren't throwing razors out into the crowd. Imagine that. It's so
dangerous. You what, some of the bands that I listen to, if they did that, we'd be in all sorts of trouble.
Intuition Fest. I'm so upset I didn't make that.
Yes.
Last year she released Free Will and Woman, which she said is the first album of her entire career that she's written from scratch. She wrote 200 songs for that album and then narrowed it down to 12 songs. Yeah.
Well, I guess she had a lot of time. She was just living off those Schick royalties.
Good album. I quite liked it, despite everyone saying she's a sellout.
I think Jewel's fabulous. I think she's great. Another band that I think is fabulous in spite of all the haters is Metallica.
Mm.
And this one certainly was a bit hard to swallow, though. This was a bitter pill to swallow, this album. And it's really maligned, even to the point now where Metallica talk about songs or talk about this album at concerts, like fans will openly boo them. And they're like, oh, you don't like that one. Yeah. Yeah, so Metallica this time 20 years ago release Saint Anger.
Saint Anger around my neck. Saint Anger around my neck. He never gets respect. Saint Anger around my neck.
You push it out. You push it out.
rapping? Was that the Evanescence guy?
No, he wasn't. That was just James, like, in the background.
Doing didn't know that he did raps.
Was, that's hardly a rap.
Sounded a little bit rappy.
Look, they were struggling at this time. I mean, they had lots of internal issues. The documentary Some Kind of Monster has well and truly covered all of that sort of stuff, and everyone knows all about it. And it was their last collaboration with producer Bob Rock, who is really known for those arena rock bands like Motley Crue and Bon Jovi and stuff like that. And, of course, he produced a Black Album, which is a classic album no matter which way you skin it even. I know there's a lot of old school Metallica fans who'd be like, no, that was the turning point for me. but they were really, I think, lost in a sea of new metal.
Yeah,
and all sorts
true.
Of stuff. And
early
that's 2000s, like
yeah.
you will hear, like you would have heard that in that grab. The production for that album is bad. It sounds bad. The snare drum is like ping. It sounds like he's hitting a beer keg. And it just didn't work. It just really sounded like all the tones were off as far as I was concerned. I really wanted to like it because like Load and Reload had come out and everyone was like really kind of like, what are they doing? That was when Metallica cut their hair, you know?
Oh, how
and then
you?
Started putting on guyliner and, you know, painting their nails.
That's
and
what
stuff.
You had to do in the early 2000s. That was kind of a rule. Wasn't this one too, you talked about Bob Rock, the producer, but didn't he also play the bass?
He played bass on it because Jason Newsted had left the band, and that's all documented in Some Kind of Monster as well. Rob Trujillo comes on board after the album's recorded and then tours with them. So they started recording it in April 2001, but they postponed it after Hetfield, the singer, went and hit rehab for alcoholism. He didn't come back for like nearly a year.
Jeez.
And you'll see in the doco, like none of them knew what was going on with the band. You know, Lars was getting worried he'd have to sell all of his $1 million artworks.
This
you know.
Sounds like NSYNC all over again.
He's
when Timberlake just went off.
Lars
and left
is a
everyone.
Wreck. He's fresh off the back of his war with Napster.
You know, yes.
Kirk just wants to surf and Jason wants to leave and so he leaves and they get a guidance counselor to come in and the guidance counselor thinks he's part of the band.
Doesn't he start giving them like music advice?
Yeah, he really does. He becomes a bit of a villain, as does Bob Rock in the documentary. And really, I mean, I think the counselor guy, in spite of how weird it all turned out, probably held them together. They probably would not have been in Metallica going forward if he wasn't there, for better or for worse. I know Ray. I know what Ray. Ray be listening to this, going, "Oh, it's garbage," and I'm like, "Yeah, okay." So the album comes out. I'm excited for it, right? And I'm working at the radio station, so the record company's like, "Yeah, let's push it." So they were on Elektra, I think, with this. I don't know who distributed it in Australia. I think it was. I can't even remember, but there was a lot. There was a big push. There was merch and there was all this stuff. And we had a listening party for it. So we got a copy of it and we had a listening party for it. And because it was the radio station, we did it at ICBM. Like at the nightclub.
At the like the Doof Doof nightclub.
Yeah.
A listening party for Metallica at the Doof Club.
And I'm like, well, that's
odd.
That's a bit rubbish, isn't it?
So anyway, it was with listeners.
Yeah. So we
did
had
Did you have any cake?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
We didn't. Anyway, we probably should have, and it should have had something else in it to make it more enjoyable. But we have the listening party, and I'm hearing the album. I'm like, I want to hear this, you know. So we're doing the listening party, but I'm laser focused on listening to the, and I'm like, is there something wrong with the PA in this venue? Because I thought that it just sounded off. I just didn't like it. I'm like, this sounds like crap.
Wow.
Like, is there something wrong with the PA in this venue? And I'm like Homer Simpson when he loses the pig off the barbecue. I'm like, it's still good. It's still good. And by the time we got to the final track on the album, I'm like, just devastated. But I thought, you know, I'll give it another go because it's the PA. And then I listened to it at home and I'm like, yeah, it's a really terrible sounding album. I mean, it has its moments. Like the song Some Kind of Monster is okay. Yeah, the production just really lets it down. Bob Rock was trying to do what producers far younger than him, like Ross Robinson, was doing with Korn and Machine Head and stuff like that, and it just didn't work. They should have just stuck to what they knew best. I mean, having said that, I think it's, you know, Metallica even now don't owe anyone anything.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact that the, like it's 40 years now and they've made an album now, which I actually think is great. And they're just making new music because they love it. So good for them. Like, you know, why wouldn't you? But Saint Anger at the time just didn't go too well. They actually released it early. You know, we talk about all the Napster stuff. They released it early, like a week early. And I remember this when we did the listening party as well, because they were really worried about all this unlicensed distribution. And I think a knee-jerk reaction to the spat that Lars had had with Napster.
Retaliating over the Napster stuff.
And, and a lot of fans had turned on Metallica at this stage, and then Saint Anger came out and they basically turned on them even further. They became quite maligned. Anyway, it's still debuted at the top of the sales charts in like 14 countries.
Didn't it bump Delta Goodrum off
it
number one?
It knocked Delta off the charts, so it did a good deed somewhere there anyway, right?
Poor Delta.
Let's go over to the box office and maybe the idiot box as well. First of all, movies. Number one in the US is Finding Nemo. Yeah, Australia represent. Number one in Australia, Matrix Reloaded. And then I think we move over to some TV news on the 1st of June.
We had a debut, Last Comic Standing. This was the American reality TV talent competition show. It was on NBC. And it, I think it went for about 7 years, right through to 2010. And then I think it started up again in 2014. So the premise was to find the funniest person in America, selecting a comedian from a large group of hopefuls. So it was kind of part Idol, part Survivor, part the real world, because they all lived together.
Oh, a bunch of comedians in a house together. That's just, that's got disaster written all over. That would be tragic. That would be, I could not think of anything more depressing.
An all new season of Last Comic Standing. You'll see the good, the bad, and this guy.
How long have you been doing stand-up?
2 years.
Where'd you get this character?
What do you mean?
Last Comic Standing premieres next Tuesday on NBC.
Yeah, comedians off stage.
And
just
if you had a bunch of comedians as well, wouldn't it, every time someone would say something, someone would have to try and be funnier and funnier and funnier and funnier. Like, it would be so annoying.
I don't know. I think maybe they just leave it all on the stage. It's funny. I've met comedians who have been very much the same person that they are on stage. They're just like a more refined version of themselves on stage. And then I've met comedians that are completely different. Like, you remember Chris Franklin, the guy that sang the song Bloke?
I've met him. He's lovely.
Me too.
Lovely guy.
And he is exactly the same person off stage.
He let me drink his bar tab once.
Oh, mate.
Lovely guy. I think that was also at ICBM at the Doof Doof
Club. Well, it's funny because I think you and I, he toured Canberra a couple of times. And I think you went out on the town with him once.
Yeah.
With a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And I went out on the town with him once. And I think it was the same outcome. We both just got absolutely hammered on Chris Franklin's bar tab and probably smoked a bunch of Winnie Blues as well. It's fantastic. Anyway, Last Comic Standing. So I don't know. I mean, Chris Franklin would have – I would have loved it if he had gone on that show.
Imagine.
It would have been fabulous.
He would have won.
But, you know, I think it's an interesting premise. But, like, stand-up is so hit and miss as well.
Yeah.
Comedy is such a subjective thing.
Well,
one person
thing.
Finds
exactly.
funny, somebody else doesn't, you know.
Exactly.
And I think that becomes even more pronounced in this day and age where everyone is so offended by everything.
Imagine trying to be a comedian now. How hard would that be?
Depends on the type of comedian you are, I think.
I think it would be so hard.
I think there's a lot of comedians.
It would be so easy to get cancelled.
There's a lot of comedians that play up to that. Like that wokeness. Mm. And then there is another school of comedians that just do not give a you know. So for this one, 7 seasons, they had the winner got a cash prize and a TV special, which is, I mean, TV specials are the things that break comedians. Mm. Like, it's Netflix own all that stuff now. Like, you get a Netflix special, you've made it as a comedian, right?
Yep.
But for season 8, which is in 2014, is that the right math? 2003 plus 8.
Because it stopped. It went on a hiatus.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry. Mm. You know, just wanted to make sure that we were getting our facts correct there. Not that I'm doubting any of your research or show. Well, maybe a little bit.
It had a hiatus and it came back in 2014.
Right. So the winner on that one got a cash prize and a talent deal with NBC.
Wow.
So that's like a half-hour scripted project developed by Universal Television. So maybe like a sitcom type deal?
Yeah, or, well, that was probably a stand-up show.
Right.
They probably did a... probably did a special or something like that. Yeah. And that is a big deal.
Well,
if
that's
you're
bigger than like a normal sort of special.
If you're a stand-up comedian trying to make it.
Well, NBC, one of the biggest networks in America.
Yeah.
You're doing well if you've been signed on to the Peacock.
That's right.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer got her break from Last Comic Standing. She was on season 5. Well, she didn't win. Yeah. She was a crowd favourite on the show. She made it to the top 4 and then got booted.
I find her one of the most unfunny people on the planet. I can't stand her. Anyway.
She's all right. Other names who did well, Eliza Schlesinger.
Yep.
She has a Netflix special, doesn't she?
She does.
I think I've seen that, yes. Roy Wood Jr., who's a Daily Show correspondent.
Yep.
Gabriel Iglesias, who's a good friend of Steve-O.
Is he friends with Steve-O?
He's friends with Iglesias. He was on Steve-O's podcast,
yeah,
and he was telling Steve-O that he's the only person in the show's history that got kicked out for not obeying the rules because he was secretly texting his girlfriend. Apparently that's against the rules.
He's a big man, Gabriel Iglesias.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does lots of really rapid-fire impersonations and voices and stuff like that. I always respect comedians that can do impersonations and voices.
Mm.
Yeah, like the one in our Hatch, Match and Dispatch clue, which we'll get to very soon. Yeah, there's another clue. It's comedian. Duh.
Offstage, however, it exposed the comedy industry's darkest side.
Well, of course it did, because some of them are quite unpleasant.
And it was very cutthroat.
Not all of them.
It was very cutthroat because they'd all been, doing the rounds and working really hard, and this is their big break.
Yeah.
There was a lot of veterans who'd been doing the comedy circuit for years.
So they wouldn't appreciate some reality show.
Well, no, they got on the show. They'd been barely scraping by for years and years, doing the circuit, no success. This is their big break. So it did turn really Survivor, where they were like, let's gang up on this guy so that we can keep going right through. It became that kind of outwit, outlast sort of scenario.
Wow, that's actually interesting.
I reckon Gabriel probably got dobbed on for texting his girl. They probably dobbed on
him. Out. They snitched.
That's my guess.
Snitches
anyway.
Get stitches. It's kind of like when you watch Idol, especially Australian Idol now, and given that we're old, you see people that were pop stars back in the day auditioning again for these reality shows to try and either reignite or fast track their career because they've just been, doing it for so long.
And I feel so bad for them when they don't get through. Because there were people that had deals, that had top 10 singles, and they go and audition and then they don't get anyone.
Like, no, you had your chance.
Heartbreaks for them. But yes, this one, apparently there was fisticuffs as well on the show.
Oh, that would have been good, watching a couple of comedians.
Secret alliances.
Amazing.
Drew Carey was a judge, and he was saying that the top 10 selection process was crooked and dishonest.
Oh, God, and he was a judge.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Some of the semi-finalists happened to be managed by an executive producer for the series, so there was some conflict of interest going on.
I mean, who would have thought that a reality TV show was rigged?
Oh, I know, right?
Speaking of reality TV shows, why not let the children get involved as well?
Oh,
This didn't last very long, this one. So on the 3rd of June, we're talking about an American Idol spin-off TV series called American Juniors, which made its debut.
The next 10 finalists will be put to the test. The audience is waiting. Now the pressure is mounting.
When you stop being nervous, it's time to get out of the business.
Who will crack first, the kids or the parents? American Juniors at 8, 7 Central, Fox Tuesday.
How's that for the line in the lead line in the promo? Who will crack first, the kids or the parents?
There would have been a lot of stage mums just off to the side there.
It just goes to show how much we wanted to see people suffer with our reality TV. I don't know that anything's changed. It's very Rome, ancient Rome, Colosseum, Christians to lions, gladiatorial combat. We want to see people completely destroyed and eviscerated in front of us. Not so much physically anymore, but maybe mentally.
Well, they didn't let Simon Cowell be a judge on this one. They thought that'd be too much for the children.
Right, yes.
They had 20 kids.
Well, just looking at him would be too much for the children. Oh, I'm going to have nightmares.
Seacrest out was the host.
Right.
And they rotated the judging panel. Debbie Gibson.
Oh, Electric Youth.
Yeah, loved her. Justin Guarani. Jordan Knight.
Oh, from New Kids on Jocks.
Yes, Nick Carter and Monica. The kids wouldn't have known who any of these judges were. Unlike American Idol, where the judges chose the finalists, American Juniors, the finalists were chosen by the show's producers, who also travelled the country doing the auditions. In the end, they formed a group called, can you guess what it was called?
American Juniors. Wow, that's
fancy
original.
That.
Did they do any Westlife songs so Simon could get some more cash?
I'm not sure, but in the group, you might recognize the name Lucy Hale. She was one of the American juniors. She was Aria Montgomery in the series Pretty Little Liars.
Is that right?
Mm.
I always
multi-talented, omni-talented.
I always like watching Lucy these young people audition in these shows, right? When you got kid.
Yes.
And they'll be like, "What song are you singing?"
Mm.
And it'll be some sort of, you know, heartfelt ballad about, like, you know.
Oh, love lost.
Yeah. It's like our son who's 9 and his favourite song is Wasted Years.
Yes.
You're 9.
He's a very busy guy. Very busy guy. Likes to be productive.
Oh, I don't know about this. We've got a book.
We do have a book.
We haven't had a book for a while, have we?
No, it's been a while between.
Oh, did
books.
We have a book, but it wasn't really a book, like as in a book that
we
had
the Harry Potter. They found Harry Potter,
right.
Remember?
We haven't done a New York Times bestseller for
a while. No, because it's been, I think Da Vinci Code was number one, and then something else that we've talked about was number one, and then Da Vinci Code was number one again. It was popping in and out.
People like, what are you reading for?
Yes.
What am I reading for?
We do.
Okay. Yeah.
We do have a new number one this week. It's called Naked Prey by John Sanford. Can you tell us about Naked Prey, please?
Two people are found hanging naked from a tree in the woods of northern Minnesota. What makes the situation particularly sensitive is the bodies are of a black man and a white woman. Dream on black man, dream on white woman. Lynching is the word everyone's trying not to say. But as Lucas Davenport begins to discover, the murders are not at all what they appear to be. Sorry, I glitched. And there is worse to come. Much, much worse.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah, there you go. There's your synopsis. I'm not really sure.
I heard Naked Prey and I was thinking it might be a romance.
No.
No, definitely not.
Well, it probably was until they got lynched and hung from a tree.
Dale, one star.
Hmm.
His review, language crude.
That's good. That's concise, Dale. I give you a one-star review of the review one star.
Diana, one star. Vulgar and gory. Gory was spelt incorrectly.
Yeah, pierced. I saw that. Mm.
Seems like it's written for men who are not interested in good writing.
I'm not interested in good writing. I'm just going to pick me up a copy of Naked Prey.
Paul, one star.
Yeah.
Sorry, Diana. He is interested in good writing because he didn't like it either.
Oh, there you go.
I was extraordinarily disappointed at the excessive, violent gore that really did not add a lot to the plot of the story.
Oh, so he's actually thought she's being, it's like, that's reverse sexism, Diana.
Mm.
I am a man and I am actually interested in good writing. Not all men, Diana. Not all men. Not all men. Right.
Carter Swift.
One word?
One word. Maybe a fan of Backstreet Boys and Tay-Tay.
Possibly.
Two stars from Carter Swift.
Oh, well, that's a step up.
A gripping storyline, but some unnecessary violence and swearing bring it down to a two-star book. People had a problem with the violence.
Yeah, and
sounds
the swearing.
Like it was pretty gross. Dr. Duran.
Oh, a doctor. There's a doctor.
Has come
is he
in.
A real doctor?
The doctor has entered the chat. Two stars.
Well,
judging by his language, full of boilerplate blather.
Oh.
That sounds like something a doctor would say.
Yeah.
It's just boilerplate blather.
Yeah.
They are all the same.
Are they? Are they? You know what I'm kind of impressed with and kind of a bit weirded out by is the royalty-free music I've chosen for the background for this. I'm not really sure what we're doing here. I don't know whether we're sort of motivationally speaking. It's kind of not suiting the story, but we'll go with
it
anyway.
It feels a little intergalactic.
Does it?
It feels like an intergalactic presentation.
Like more of a science fiction story.
Like a corporate intergalactic.
It should have been like a Klingon and a Ferengi hanging from the tree, not a black man and a white woman.
Elizabeth Two Stars.
Yes, yes.
I was flying Air Canada Rogue. No TV screens, no music.
Oh, that
all
is pretty
my
rogue.
Library e-books had expired. And I needed a book for a 5-hour airplane journey. This was perfect.
No TV and no music. Or is she just opted out? Because I feel like this is a bad advertisement for Air Canada. I'm sure that you could watch a movie.
Maybe she's just being a type because she said she was flying it rogue. She's going rogue.
I'm
so
not
I think
taking
it's
the
on
headset.
Her.
Yeah.
It's on
Elizabeth. I'm not going to pay for the extra for the headset. Yeah.
So I need a book. Yep. This was perfect. It kept my interest and successfully distracted me from the fact there was zero leg room. Sounds like she's reviewing
Air
Canada, not the book.
Yes.
Zero leg room and only lukewarm tea to drink because it took eons for the staff to wheel the tea/coffee trolley through the narrow aisle.
Right.
With so many passengers from the front of the plane trooping back and forth to the toilets in the rear.
Mm.
I don't think she had a very good flight.
Doesn't sound like it.
Poor Elizabeth, two stars. If I'd finished the book on the plane, I'd have given it three stars. But finishing the book back in the comfort of home, i.e. hot tea, not lukewarm tea,
right,
it began to feel a bit like there were too many car chases.
Oh, see, so the bad flight distracted her from actually how shitty the book was.
Too many car chases. Yep. So she wanted to give it 2.5 stars. Mm. However, half stars aren't allowed.
Right.
So she rounded it down to two stars.
Car chases. I haven't read many books.
A gory car chase.
With car chases.
And lots
them.
Of swearing and gore.
I think as an author it would be quite challenging to write
a car chase. That keeps you interested.
In movies it's easy to sort of film and direct a car chase.
Stunning.
But as a writer.
Visually stunning. But how do you describe it in words?
I think that takes a bit of talent. I think that, John Sanford was certainly up for the task of writing a car chase.
And did more than one car chase.
Maybe he deserves
obviously,
a little bit
too
more
many.
Kudos for actually writing car chases. Mm. Anyway.
Well, Elizabeth just sounds like a grump, to be honest.
Yeah, right.
She was also offended because the book said Canadians referred to snowmobiles as snow machines, but they are in fact called skidoos.
That's very woke of her. The correct term is it's not a snow machine. It's not a snowmobile. It's a skidoo. Yeah, okay?
Get it right.
That's right. That's racist.
Nancy A. Hudson, also two stars. Sanford's mm-hmm. writing is also going downhill.
Is that a snowmobile joke? Oh, sorry. Downhill? Anyway.
I mean, those run-on sentences have got to stop.
Right.
I am hoping that Sanford either finds a better editor or spends a little more time using his grammar check.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's what happened. Maybe he did use a grammar check and is like, did you mean skidoo? Or maybe he wrote skidoo and it was like, did you mean
paperclip popped
snowmobile?
Up. I think you meant snowmobile.
Exactly. Okay, hatches, matches, and dispatches. Have we got a birth or a birthday? We've got a
We've
couple
got
of
two
birthdays.
Birthdays this
birthdays.
Week.
We don't want to talk about anyone celebrating their 20th, so we'll go to some people that are probably closer to our age and having birthdays that we can perhaps relate to.
Happy birthday on the 4th of June to Russell Brand.
Oh, I can't relate
Can
to him.
Can you relate to him?
I'm not as much of a pants man as he is. I wish I was.
Didn't he win Shagger of the Year?
Oh,
he won some award called Shagger
he's
of the
been
Year
addicted.
Once.
He's, well, he's,
oh, he had a sex addiction, didn't
well,
he?
Well, he was addicted to a lot of stuff. And he's actually a really big advocate for addiction and mental health and drug rehab and all that sort of stuff, as
he
well
is.
As being a comedian and an actor. He actually started as a stand-up comic and he's gone on to film and all sorts of stuff. But he was on MTV in the UK.
I didn't know
in
that.
In the 2000s, yeah. He worked on radio. He was very big on radio over in the UK. But he got fired, as all good radio announcers do after he was reading pornographic material live on air. It's kind of you're kind of asking for trouble there, Russell.
Possibly,
He was the host of Big Brother's Big Mouth, which was a Big Brother spin-off show.
So that was like Hot Dogs.
Yeah.
So he had the equivalent of a Hot Dogs show.
Well, I guess.
Hot Dogs
and then
Big
he ended
Brother
up with
spin-off.
the Russell Brand show on The Beeb in April 2006 on BBC Radio Music. He was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
That
Remember
was a great
that film?
Movie.
Great
I
film.
Loved that movie.
Yes.
What was that, 2008?
Yes. That was very confronting, because the opening scene is
Wang.
Just like, penis.
I know.
There's a penis.
Did not expect
they just
that.
Let it happen. It wasn't Russell Brand's. It was Jason Segel's, I think. But anyway,
yes.
We digress.
And it was very inappropriate. Get him to the Greek. Was that a spin-off of Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
No, I don't. Oh, maybe it was.
I think it had something to
he
do with
He played a
it.
Rock star in both movies.
That was a good movie.
Jonah Hill was in it. It was okay. It wasn't as good as Forgetting Sarah Marshall, I didn't think.
And he's done a lot of voice work. I think he did some in Despicable Me.
Yeah, he was the old sidekick dude in Despicable Me. He was like Gru's old man sidekick. Yeah.
Hop. And then Despicable Me 2.
Uh-huh.
Then he did a few stand-up things. He had the Messiah Complex
That's
in 2013.
Right. And actually, this clip is him dealing with a heckler in that particular special.
Why are you here in this space, fellow human? All right, darling, no more talking, because I recognise this. I recognise this problem. I've not had a life free from difficulties of a psychological nature. Therefore, it's my duty to be patient with you. I can hear in the tenor, in the cadence of your voice, that you are not a bad person. But this thing here, I'm at work. Like, this is not a conversation dynamic, honest. Like, we're not in a f***ing calf. Even if we were in a calf, you'd go, God, this would not be helpful. So from now on, look, after the show, honestly, we'll meet each other and I think we're going to have a lot in common. And we're going to get on fine. But from now on, if you're thinking, I'm going to shout something out, what you should do is write it down on a little bit of paper and then push that paper into your asshole.
Yeah, I like him. I like his stand-up. I think
he's
great.
I would not heckle him in a million years. How could you go to his show and think that heckling him is going to end well?
I feel like even though he dealt with that heckler, I think he did it in the nicest possible way.
He was very kind about it, wasn't he?
He's kind of a kind guy. He's a bit hippy-dippy, trippy, you know, but I like the dude. It was funny. I heard him on the Joe Rogan podcast, and, of course, he's since rehabbed from drugs. Like, he doesn't touch anything. And Joe Rogan is a bit of an advocate for doing things like smoking weed and taking mushrooms and stuff like that. And that conversation is like Russell Brand's like, oh, yeah, tell me more about that. It's like, you know, you can sort of see that side of him creeping back in. But he has become very much an activist. You know, he's definitely turned his life around. He's still a very funny, very witty, very charming and engaging guy, but he has become, I think, much more politically and culturally focused. He's definitely an advocate for the way addicts are treated in society.
Didn't he do he did a doco on addiction, didn't
yes,
he, at
he
one
did.
Stage?
He
that
did.
Was pretty
it's very
good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
interesting. And I tend to share a lot of his views on addiction and how people treat addicts as much of a pain in the ass as addicts can be. You know, addiction is still very much a disease, and I sort of share his stance on that.
He talks out about climate change and media bias.
Yep.
He had a political comedy web series called The Truths. Mm-hmm. He's released a book. He's done a documentary. He's got a podcast. He was obviously married to Katy Perry for a while.
Yep.
There was an interesting article a couple of months ago where he was effectively denounced by George Monbiot or Monbiot of The Guardian. So George in 2014 nominated Brand as his hero of the year. He just thought he was amazing, loved everything.
Really?
He did.
So why did he change his mind?
He was saying that he appears to have switched from challenging injustice to conjuring phantoms. And this has got a lot to do with some people feel that he goes down the path of conspiracy theories a lot.
Yeah, okay.
And he speaks out about people that maybe he shouldn't be speaking out against, people who are kind of trying to do the right thing.
Well, he can say what he wants, can't he? I mean, it's a free world.
No,
it's not. But you know what I mean. Like, it's...
I think they feel that, some of the stuff that he talks about, some of the conspiracy, it's quite dangerous because he does have such a big platform and a big following.
Yeah.
And this guy from The Guardian was saying that Brand repeatedly says he's not a conspiracy theorist, but he does certainly sound like one. That's The Guardian's words.
There is a lot of stuff that he does that I kind of don't agree with as well, I guess. But I find he's very active on YouTube. And
yes.
I actually find him quite annoying on that platform.
He can be quite frantic. I find watching him, I get a little bit stressed because he's very frenetic.
He's
and
in your face. Yeah.
He's just. He is a lot. You don't want to just chill out with a cup of tea and watch him. It's too much.
No.
You've got to be ready. You've got to be paying attention. And I think you watch him and you take what you want from it, and you question the things that you don't necessarily agree with. And this is the whole thing as well. He's never claimed to be a politician or a leader or anything like that. He's just talking about his experiences and what he sees and what he feels. So I don't know about this guy sort of coming out talking about him being dangerous and a conspiracy theorist. It's like,
well, I think he talks a lot about mental health as well. Like, when Russell Brand is on camera or on stage or in interviews, he is up, right?
Yeah,
is up all the time. Now, what goes up must come down. So I do feel like we don't really see that version of him. And I'd be interested to, well, you know what? It's none of my business. Like, he doesn't need to show that to us if he doesn't want to. But I'm sure that it's not, he's not full on all the time. You can't be. You can't put that much energy out into the world without taking some time to recharge and allow yourself to.
Very smart guy, though. Like, just the stuff that he is across.
I just like him. I just like, I love his intensity.
Yeah.
And I love, even if he's off base and incorrect about stuff and he says stuff that I don't necessarily agree with, I like his passion and lust for life. Yeah. And I think that that's something that can be admired for sure, regardless of whether you like or dislike him. He has a huge passion and lust for life and lust for lots of other things as well. Anyway. All right, the Hatch Match Dispatch Clue. We're at the end. We're wrapping up, which is wonderful because we've got to go and record another podcast straight after this. So it's going to be a long night. You wait till you see next week's one after we've had several beers. It'll be a good time.
Sorry in advance.
Anyway, what celebrity having a birthday similar? Well, shares a birthday with Russell Brand, I guess. Probably not the same age, but they said this.
I was a PA on an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie called Collateral Damage, and all right. One person's like, no, and that was the big line in that movie was, open up the door, there's a bomb in there.
Do you remember that movie, Collateral Damage, was one that they pushed forward the release for? They postponed the release
because of
September 11.
Yes.
Yeah. So he was a PA on that. He was a personal assistant or production assistant on that. Probably production assistant. I think that's what the P would stand for, production in that.
Yes, yes.
If you said Bill Hader, you would be correct. Bill Hader, he's an actor, a comedian, a writer, producer, director. He's in that TV show Barry, which is hilarious and fabulous.
He was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall as well. He was, Russell.
Yeah. I don't remember. I need to go back and watch that again to see him in that. He's had a lot of small parts in films. He was in Superbad.
Mm-hmm.
He was great in Superbad.
Knocked Up.
He was in Knocked Up. Yeah, he's been in all of those sorts of films. Saturday Night Live alumni. He is a very, very funny guy. He got a lot of attention because of Saturday Night Live, which I guess led him to the position he's in now. I think he was on that from like 2005 to 2013.
He's
you know, he's probably at this stage in his career, if it's 2003, he's probably doing the stand-up comedy circuit quite a bit and working as a PA on films like Collateral Damage, which was, you know, probably a year or two ago. He's got Emmy nominations for the show Barry and for Saturday Night Live, I think, a Peabody Award. I really liked him in the sequel to It. I thought he stole the show in that film, but the rest of the film was a little bit dismal. But he was great in it. He was the best part about that film.
I really like his voice acting. So more recently he's moved into voicing animated stuff. And you can understand why, because he's just so dynamic with his voice and his impressions, and the way that he can act with his voice is phenomenal. Inside Out. Remember he was in Inside Out? He was so good in that.
Yeah.
I think he was in the second Angry Birds movie as well.
Yep.
And he's obviously also known for his impressions.
Oh, he's in Cloudy and a Chance of Meatballs too, which our son watches all the time. Yes. And he does do the best celebrity. His Tom Cruise impression is amazing. And his Schwarzenegger one, as you would have heard there, is on point. You need to hear actually the rest of that story.
The first time I met him, I go, he comes up to me and he had his cigar in his mouth and he goes, what is Jeff and Pita? That's his hair and makeup guys.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't know, I'll find them. And he goes, find them. Show me your leadership capabilities.
So good. So good. And that's it. Happy birthday to Bill Hader as well. We are out of here. Oh, what's happening next week? What do we got next week?
Ooh, we've got a Mars mission.
Yeah.
You love a bit of space exploration.
Get your ass to Mars. That's my terrible Schwarzenegger impersonation. Sorry. Apologies to Bill Hader and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
2020 cricket is born.
Oh, great.
And we're going to chat about a little company that really invented the way in which we've monetized search on the internet. I don't think they've gotten enough credit for it. It's a very interesting story.
Super geeky tech segment.
Yes,
coming up.
It is.
All right. You can find us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Search for T-20 Podcast. Thank you. Thank you so much. Like, we love making this podcast, but the only reason we love it as much as we do is because you download it each and every week. And you know what? We like that. That's good. We have.
Thank you.
It is a small but much loved audience. So there's not many of you, but we love you all very much.
We appreciate you.
We do appreciate you. We'd appreciate it a little bit more if you told some of your friends, and then we could love them equally. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for taking the time to rewind. Join us next time for another Week That Was 20 years ago. In the meantime, come and reminisce on the socials. Search for T-20 Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.